So the formal part of the retreat is coming to a close. Hopefully over the last few days the instructions have been understandable and useful. Maybe you won't notice until you go home, and that's the real test. You go back to our usual environment, our usual habitual tendencies, hopefully, or they could be lurking there, but hopefully we're a bit more aware of them. And this particular practice is also helpful if we can keep it up. Just like any exercise, physical exercise, there is something to be said for it as being like a conditioned experience. Keep up with the formal exercises. They do have some carryover. They do have some effect. And basically this practice, I mean, some of it you may recognize as quite familiar to you, using the meditation object, sensation of natural breathing as a focus for attention, to develop some degree of calmness of mind. And each one of us has to know how much is calm enough, because each one of us has our own particular tendencies and personality. And of course, each time is different too. One point is that when one's developing calm meditation, focused attention, it's helpful to keep in mind that we don't use it as a way of dissociating. I mean, as a way of trying to escape from suffering, which is very easy to do, because the experience of some degree of calm, it does provide an experience where at least our reactiveness to the suffering can be quieted down and calmed, maybe even calmed away completely. As long as we keep in mind that the right view in spiritual practice has to do with really understanding the nature of suffering, not just temporarily escaping from it. Certainly it has its place to play in our life, because, I mean, if life is always suffering, gosh, it's hard work. So we need a break sometimes. But if we have that as a fixed attitude, just using calm meditation to escape from suffering, we'll never find a real complete solution to it, complete resolution, just a temporary fix, which has its place, but it's only temporary. And so if we use the calm meditation just as a way of calming down our reactivity to suffering, then it gives us the possibility to look at it more closely and get a different perspective on it, see it in a new way. So once we can recognize some degree of calm, then it's helpful to actually sharpen the awareness with regard to physical sensations and feeling tone states of mind, the four foundations of mindfulness, that we can actually re-engage with suffering, if you like, from a new perspective, not just trying to escape from it and calming it away or putting it to sleep. And really, when we begin to actually observe the nature of sensations and these feeling tone states of mind, even suffering in general, our consciousness begins to shift, begins to change. And I think really Buddhist meditation, Buddhist practice really only begins when our consciousness can change from an object-orientated consciousness to a process-orientated consciousness. Instead of seeing body, we see physical processes. Instead of seeing something like a feeling tone, like happiness, is something which we can seek after and hold on to and put in our pocket and keep, we see it just as a changing process. Feelings are rising and passing away, they're just processes, very natural processes. Same with states of mind, they're just processes. But of course, you know, we have our own preferences. We'd like the pleasant ones, we'd like the ones which are supportive of our ego. But when you begin to observe, there's a whole range there. Some we have some degree of control over, and maybe you might notice that most you don't. They just arise and pass. So who knows where they come from sometimes. You know, in the Buddhist teaching, popular Buddhism, they'd say, well, it's just my past karma. Sounds like an excuse. to think stupid thoughts or angry thoughts or something. So basically, where does it come from? Who knows sometimes? Just conditions, some conditions somewhere. But when we begin to see the processive nature of these experiences, we have a different relationship to them. And then it's a matter of, if you like, kind of re-engaging with suffering from a different attitude, a different understanding. It becomes more of a process now, which is much softer and flowing, a little bit easier to relate to. But it's a matter of reprocessing it. You know, it's in the development of concentration, we can lose ourselves. If you can really practice it quite deeply, then you focus on a meditation object. And if you get deep concentration, the subject and the object come together. You get absorption. So the subject is lost in the object. You get a unified consciousness. And it's a very, very blissful and very, very exalting, a very, very powerful experience. However, it comes to an end because it's just a conditioned experience also, conditioned by our ability to keep focusing on the object. Then you come back to yourself again. Sometimes it's even worse, because now you see how, you know, how kind of coarse this self is compared to that unified consciousness. But the Buddha realized that's not an end in itself. That's only a means to an end. So some degree of calm can help us to quiet or to kind of provide some space around the reactivity to suffering. But really we need to actually investigate what is suffering, what's the cause of it. So the Buddha realized that actually understanding the whole process of self-creation is the key to it. When you begin to bring more awareness to the sensations, and particularly the unpleasant feeling tones and unpleasant experiences, that's when you see this contraction, this grasping. It's a kind of a grasping. And then that's how the object begins to be formed, where the grasping turns it into something more substantial. The processes become objectified. When there's an object, there's a subject there. So then the duality happens, the object and the subject. And then we fight it out now, the subject trying to control and organize the object. But a lot of those objects we actually have no control over. Yeah. They aren't within the control of self. When you can see that process, and you see this contraction, it's not very pleasant. You can actually experience the difficulty of it, the weight of it. And so you can begin to let go and step away from it. You can unwind it, if you like. But we can experience this in states of concentration temporarily, so we know it's possible. But then we come back to the self, and we still then have our old habit tendencies, the sankharas, firmly ingrained, firmly established. They're just the old automatic habit tendencies, the latent tendencies. So that's what we need to unravel or reprocess, if you like. So when the mind is somewhat calm, it can be helpful then to use that calm to investigate, go back into those old habit tendencies, those old compulsions, those old ways of making ourselves suffer, if you like, and begin to unpack them, unravel them. This is where the practice is now. This is what really is the practice. I mean, what we can do here probably most of the time is just develop the meditation exercises and get some experience of calm, hopefully, and clarity, collectedness, and be the practice of metta-friendliness, we can understand. But now the practice is now trying to apply those lessons in the wider range of our life situation. That's where the sense of self is most evident. It rises up with those old ways of relating. And then, you know, it's also difficult. We go back to our ordinary life situation, and maybe our family environment, our work environment doesn't support that way of seeing reality. Yeah. You say, how are you doing? How did you practice? Did you get enlightened? They keep relating to you as a subject or an object all the time. And hey, that's not quite right. You can say, well, I didn't get enlightened, but enlightenment happened. No. But unfortunately, it didn't fit in well with my ordinary life, so I left it at the monastery. And that's why you have a big roof here, because everybody left their enlightenment behind. But if we understand this principle, understand this way of practice, we could apply it. We have to keep applying it. And very helpful to have a supportive environment. Very fortunate to have a place like this, a place of practice. And hopefully you have some good friends who can help you and keep you encouraged and on the right path. But really it's a matter of continuing with it. You know, the Buddha said he points out the path and his teachings are reasonably clear to understand. But we have to travel that path ourselves. We have to do the practice and do the traveling on that path to be able to apply it to a wide range of our experience. So this is something we need to do ourselves. So, you know, the formal retreat comes to an end, but say, now the advance begins. That's an old one. And of course, to be able to continue with the practice, I mean, hopefully you have your own personal practice to do each day. And maybe there's some group you can go to or some friends you can meet with once in a while. And maybe come to a retreat sometimes, and always come to the monastery to spend some time. And if you really appreciate this opportunity, it's helpful also to support it, you know, financially and with your energy sometimes to come and help out. And also making use of the facilities, keeping the spirit of practice alive too. Otherwise it's just empty buildings. Nobody's actually using them and practicing here. So we have the opportunity to practice. The Buddha's given us these teachings, and we have the place and the friends and the encouragement, and we just need to keep going with it. So this is something really which is up to each one of us to keep going, and hopefully you will be able to deepen the practice and see some results for yourself. I think it's a matter of degrees. If we recognize just what value it is, we can give it some priority in our life. Nowadays, there's many, many demands upon our time and energy. And rather than just try and fit spiritual practice into our busy life, I'd say just give it some priority. Raise it up on the priority list, you know, put it on your to-do list at the top. It takes precedent. And then you'll find that, you know, if that's really a priority, well, you give it more time and attention and energy then. And then you may find that many of the things that on your to-do list aren't really that important anyway. when your mind is much more peaceful and clear, you can maybe clear them out a bit more efficiently, and maybe they aren't really that important anyway. Mm-hmm. And you recognize what's the real meaning and real purpose of life then. A lot of the other things, they aren't really that useful. You know? Just ways that people usually fill their time. Yeah, if you haven't got anything else to do, well, you can always find something to do, but is it really meaningful, really useful? So we have the opportunity to practice, so now it's your turn. It's all up to you to continue with it. So, good luck. So,
I said something that Marian said something. Yeah, the directors of La Bruna Foundation want to express our appreciation and gratitude for Sanatana for coming, visiting us. I think your Dhamma will be at the monastery until Wednesday morning before you go. And so thank you again, Aisha. And Marian wants to say something. Yeah.
So before we take off from here, we have a photo at the back of the salon. Anything else?
But
I've forgotten.
And we want to chant the dedication of merit on page 27 in some book. I don't know what the book is. So the dedication of merit. On page 27, look at the
reflections on sharing blessings.
Yeah.
Do the English version on page 27.
Yeah, some of 27, they don't work. 33. Okay, 33, the English version. Yeah, and a couple of you know, I'm watching you there by you.
Oh, okay, here.
Okay,
so you want to.
Yeah.
Through the goodness that arises from my practice, may my spiritual teachers and guides of great virtue, my mother, my father, and my relatives, the sun and the moon, and all virtuous leaders of the world, may the highest gods and evil forces, celestial beings, guardian spirits of the earth, and the Lord of death, may those who are friendly, indifferent, or hostile, may all beings receive the blessings of my life. May they soon attain the threefold bliss and realize the deathless. Through the goodness that arises from my practice and through this act of sharing, may all desires and attachments quickly cease and all harmful states of mind until I realize Nirvana in every kind of birth. May I have an upright mind with mindfulness and wisdom, austerity and vigor. May the forces of delusion not take hold, nor weaken my resolve. The Buddha is my excellent refuge. Unsurpassed is the protection of the Dhamma. The solitary Buddha is my noble lord. The Sangha is my supreme support. Through the supreme power of all these, may darkness and illusion be dispelled.
Bow.
Yeah, bow together.